And welcome everyone to a brand new episode of the DKP here at WrestlingObserver.com and F4WOnline.com. I am, of course, as always, your host, Alan, and I am here for the second part of our year in review series, looking at the year 2014. And our next promotion on the menu is, of course, the Wild World of World Wrestling Entertainment. And it was quite the newsworthy year in World Wrestling Entertainment, and I felt, for you listeners, I had to bring together two men who would be capable of handling this wide array of talking points that we have today, and I think I have the two men for the job, two men who did this job last year, Todd Martin and Justin Shapiro. Guys, how are you?
I'd say it's the same time. Good.
I'm doing well.
Todd refuses to commit.
And I'd like to wish you a happy holiday, Alan. I understand that everyone in Ireland today had the day off of school or work to celebrate Conor McGregor's fight on Sunday.
You know, I was just thinking before we started recording, the last time I think you were on the show here with me, Todd, was right before, I think, the fight in Dublin that he had. And I remember telling you about the buzz in the city for that. But I was actually just telling a few people in an email, our little Fight Game blog email group that we have going, fightgameblog.com. Check it out. I just put up a blog about my top 100 wrestlers of all time. Anyway, so I was telling Mr. Gareth Gonzalez and Dion Greeley there in the email that I had the phrase Conor McGregor is popular and the UFC isn't has been thrown around a few times. I knew it's kind of the case, but at lunch today in work, there was eight of us sitting around a table, and Conor McGregor came up. He's been coming up a lot in conversations I've experienced in the last few days, and came up at lunchtime today, and everyone was talking, and I was, of course, shiting on and going on and on about him, just this and that and the other, and everyone was kind of saying their bit. Everyone seemed to know what was going on, and then just whatever way the conversation led, I dropped the name John Jones and Ronda Rousey. I think I was talking about the Reebok deals, because McGregor just signed a Reebok deal. I mentioned John Jones and Ronda Rousey, and it was like that scene in the movies where, like, you say something inappropriate and, like, the music cracks off and there's this screechy sound of the record, and everyone just stopped and, like, looked at me like I had just said something in, like, double dutch or, like, called their mothers whores or something. Just these blank faces, like, who? I swear, not one person around the table knew either of those names. And I was like, Jesus, none of you know John Jones? especially with how much Jones has been in the news, and, like, on, like, I don't know, I'm sure, I don't really go on ESPN much, but I'm sure John Jones was all over, like, ESPN in the last week and stuff with the drug test failures. But, yeah, Not a real thing. There is an element of UFC popularity over here, but as far as mainstream, I don't think so. But McGregor, as bad as mainstream as it gets right now in this country.
Now, what about Jose Aldo? Would people be familiar with him as the man that's burned in effigy, or are they not even aware of him?
Not aware in the slightest. he's thrown around in vague terms as, quote, the champion.
Your anecdote sort of reminds me of that Terry Funk promo on Mick Foley that Mick recounts in his book, the one that's like trying to get his goat, as it were. He says, your wife's a whore, your children are whores, Bischoff's a whore. I think the equivalent with our man Dave Meltzer would be like, Dave, your wife's a whore. Your brother-in-law's not that cool. John Jones and Ronda Rousey aren't draws. That's the one you get them on.
I gotta say, too, Alan, I love the country of Ireland. Some of my best friends are Irish. But I'm gonna
say, wait, is that true? Is that true?
No,
or
that's not true. But I'm going to be greatly amused when Jose Aldo comes over to Ireland and knocks out Conor McGregor in front of 80,000 people.
Oh, I'm fully expecting it. Like, I really want that fight to happen, because either result will just be epic, and I will have just, I will be grinning from ear to ear at the greatness of the experience, whether it's Conor McGregor wins and 80,000 people in Croke Park are losing their absolute shit, or it's Conor McGregor loses and everyone just this, it will be the silence again. Like, it will be that, and Jose Aldo will just be standing there awkwardly in the middle of Dublin with it would just be the most awkward thing ever, and I'm just going to take such great pleasure in it. It would be tremendous. Oh, great stuff. But hey, we can't waste any more time on this, guys, because we've got a full year of a very, very newsworthy WWE to talk about. And
timestamp, 6:24, what's music song.
That's, I suppose, the first thing to really mention. Did you just include the music in your timestamp?
I didn't account for it, so it's useless.
Oh, I thought you did, because you're a little over.
Well, you have them come impressive. And play it live every time we start the show, so...
I do, yes. So never...
you count them in when you're ready to fade out.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, that's the first thing I kind of want to bring up. It's just, for whatever you can say about WWE quality-wise this year... I don't know, have we ever had a year as newsworthy? 2001 is probably the only one that comes to mind for me as far as most newsworthy years in the mainstream American wrestling promotion.
It's funny you bring up 01, Todd, take it.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
In terms of, newsworthiness combined with just like, losing your mind and taking your eye off the ball due to not even outside commitments this time, but, you know, ambitious company things. This was there have been down years before. I don't know if there have been years this chaotic and points between 01 and 14 where it was like, seriously, what are you doing? Not just the usual, what are you doing, but for reals, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't gone through, obviously, year by year to look at the individual years, but that sounds intuitively right to me. I mean, this was a very noteworthy year in a lot of different ways. And I mean, I think people think of it primarily negative because the end of the year was so bad, but there also was a lot of positive stuff. Like, I mean, really, this was the biggest rebuilding year as far as pushing new people on top in years and years and years. You know, we finally saw, and you can quibble with the way that some of them were presented, but from Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns to Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt, I mean, this was a year where you saw a bunch of new people on top. And you saw with the NXT taking off in a way that it hadn't before. I think you saw more of sort of a crystallization of the sorts of people that you're going to see moving forward, which is a bunch of indie guys as opposed to muscle guys. If you look at the roster in NXT and the fact that, you know, Daniel Bryan and Dean Ambrose and the guys on that succeeded in WWE are basically, you know, former indie successes. I think really sort of the business you know, sort of changed the way that it sort of organized, and I think the way that you're going to see the next few years are very much going to be influenced by what happened in 2014.
Well, let's start digging into some of these stories, and first one I suppose we can start with is, to me, one of the great good turning to bad stories we've ever had in this company, and
there's
the story
like
of
seven
the
of them. Brian,
that's the story of
Wyatt,
the Shield.
Shield. Okay, that one.
Yeah. There's a few options, but this one in particular stands out to me, particularly so since I, for my match of the year balloting, I went back and watched the Shield Wyatt's match from Elimination Chamber, and it just really hit me as they did the video package for this match, which was a great video package, highlighting a bunch of things that I was like, oh, that was really cool, that was really cool, oh, that was really hot, that was a cool sound. One thing after another. And then the video package ended, and you could hear the crowd just being like, the crowd volume is getting up and up, and the excitement as they went from video package to starting the announcements for the guys coming down to the ring. And you just rarely get, that's something you used to get a lot in the WWE, and you rarely get that anymore. But it was really happening here, and of course everyone talks about how as the guys were facing off before the bell, the crowd were already chanting, "This is awesome." And so often in wrestling these days, especially TNA, we get just ridiculously unnecessary "This is awesome" chants, just with fans trying to be cute or whatever. But this honestly felt like a real legitimate, these fans thought this was awesome, and it was a really special moment. And the buzz as these guys started to collide was off the charts. And when you think about it, if you had said at that moment when these six guys were going at each other that in a few months there'd be a program involving two of the main dudes here, Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose, and they'd be built up in a serious hate-filled feud, and there'd be crickets, and there'd be no buzz whatsoever, nobody really talking about how anything was particularly great, fans kind of dead for the main event pay-per-view matches involving these guys, you just wouldn't have been able to believe it. And that's where we are. It was a sad year in terms of the Shield, because I think, as we've talked about many times on this show, the Shield at their peak was one of the best things WWE have ever produced. And we got a year and a half, a little more, of just really great stuff that was never, I don't think a foot was ever put wrong to any major degree with the booking of the Shield, the performance of the Shield. It was so perfect. And I was skeptical when they split them up, and I feel my skepticism was perhaps not skeptical enough, because honestly, for me, it's been worse than I really even envisioned. I think Seth is probably doing the best of the bunch in terms of what I would have thought, but at the same time, there's elements of his character and the way he's used that I'm not really enjoying. Ambrose, I think, is just like two tires that have been slashed, just dead to water for me. His character's a joke, can't take him seriously, not entertained by it at all. His matches aren't really delivering. And Roman Reigns, just everyone's been talking about Roman Reigns recently, and I'll let you guys go to town on that, because I think everyone knows the deal there. But yeah, that's my very, very sad thoughts on the Shield. And I should probably note, like, literally maybe my biggest markout moment ever at a wrestling event, and the people who were there beside me mocked me ferociously for this. I don't even know if it was brought up on the show. I think it might have been. How when the Shield came out at WrestleMania and they walked out by us, I had like some kind of an orgasmic reaction. It was very strange. It was an out of body experience, I have to say. And then there's a mild video or accident. Minor video clip of me during the midst of this markout, and you can kind of see me losing my shit. I appeared to take my coat off and then put it back on really quickly. It was really weird. And yeah, I freaked out, and I was just so into these guys. I thought they were the best, and now it's like, eh. And I can't believe how bad that is. As I'm losing my voice,
yeah,
take it away.
Throw to one of us, player. Pick your favorite.
Go ahead.
I'm going Justin.
Yeah. Put me in. Big Shot. DKP Show 2015. Here we go. Okay. Yeah, there's so much there, though. Because, you know, all three of them had such interesting trajectories for better and for worse. I think it's very telling that it says something. People kind of sussed out in over the summer. The plan of succession was for Brock Lesnar to get the title initially by Bryan and then eventually from Cena, and then drop it to Roman Reigns to put over Roman Reigns as the new standard bearer, Vince's last champion before he like ascends to Valhalla, usher in a brand new era of you know, periods of time they shift through in that signature at the beginning of the show. It's Roman Reigns' time, baby. And what does it say now that when we're recording this show, I think Reigns is less over than he's been at any point since he came up. And Lesnar still is Brock Lesnar, but of all the steam he accumulated from breaking the streak and squashing John Cena, I'd say he has less momentum now than he did after WrestleMania or after SummerSlam. So this is what they were building to on purpose with two guys. Well, I mean, Brock has the mitigating factors of his contract, but the one guy they want to put everything behind. So this is their idea of helping. So, returning to your Shield point, yeah, it's just without them, you sort of see what a big hole in the show there was. I think from 2011 to 14, the show was really carried and propped up in ways we didn't maybe even entirely realize by the combinations over that period of CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, and the Shield, and then we lost them all within like a 3 month or so period, and then you saw what happened.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, with the Shield, when they broke up, like, the common thought was that the problem was they did it too early, and they could have had more impact if they had delayed it longer and sort of made it a bigger deal. But really, the problem ended up being more that the sort of energy that they had as a unit really wasn't replicated in any of the guys when they broke off, which is sort of funny because you got three guys with all three different characters. So you'd figure one of them would sort of in some way carry on the energy that the Shield had, and really none of them did. I mean, the Shield...
Well, I think, just to clarify, Todd, are you putting that fault, or not so much fault, but are you saying that's because of them, or do you think that's purely the way they were used and treated? Because I thought there was the opportunity there for all three to really kind of have that momentum carry over to them as singles. And I thought WWE basically did, right from the start, did everything they could to put a wet blanket over that.
Oh, of course it was WWE. I mean, it certainly wasn't any of their faults.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, I mean, it was the way that they were presented. And, I mean, here's the thing. It's not all bad. Like, in the sense that, like, one of the things people worried when they broke them up was that they would sort of become forgotten and lost in the shuffle. And even though Dean Ambrose has lost basically every major match he's had since then, he still hasn't been lost in the shuffle, right? Like, he isn't like a mid-card guy. He's still one of the key guys on the show. Rollins is, you know, arguably the top heel they've got, and Reigns is a guy that they've been building up as one of their top babyfaces for the entire period. So they're all getting a push. It's just that the thing that was cool about the Shield was there were three badasses that went in and they got into big fights, and it was a serious presentation on a goofy show. And the switch of that was away from that was Rollins sort of adopted sort of a Triple H persona of just sort of a heel, talking slowly and being sort of irritable. Ambrose became a cartoon character, and Reigns became a cartoon character. Whereas, you know, what was cool about the Shield was they were just like, you know, they would go out there and they would kick ass. So it would be nice if at least one of them sort of still had that persona. And I feel like the closest would be Dean Ambrose. Like, I still feel like there's something. I mean, I really feel like Ambrose has the potential to be something special, but he's much more of an Austin type character than what they're turning him into, which I don't even know what it is. Like George the Animal Steel.
The problem is they're trying to do 2001 comedy Steve Austin with him to a much less funny level before he has the run of 1997 to 2000 Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You know what's – that was the saving grace of the initial breakup. I think we talked about it on your show before. I mean, everybody talked about it, was that as Todd said, I think the initial projections were like Ambrose becomes top heel, Reigns becomes top babyface, Rollins becomes cruiserweight and mid-carder. And instead they switched up the dynamic, and Ambrose and Rollins was really hot in the summer up until that Cinderblock dealio. Both the feud and the reactions for Dean Ambrose were the grassroots thing, where at the time everyone was projecting Ambrose Reigns as the big, tug of war instead of where we are now with Bryan and Roman Reigns. But it's after Ambrose came back and they actually started booking him on television as one of their important figures. Again, that idea of, oh, thanks for helping so much. This is what you actually want to be happening, that has cooled him off so much, and that grassroots.
Was his first night back the one where they had him get the mustard and ketchup and use them as guns.
That was one of his first TVs back, yeah.
Yeah, and then they did because, like, the dummy stuff. And yeah.
Think about this. Like, you have this easy setup. Seth Rollins breaks his face with a cinder block, and he comes back in time for this Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And instead of doing what he had been doing, which is cutting serious, angry promos, like vowing a lifetime of retribution on Rollins, that's when he went into, like, the comedy wacky man stuff. And that's when they put him in that like four-way WrestleMania 10 tournament instead of just Ambrose versus Rollins, and then ended up doing those matches at the end anyway. So, yeah, that's it's one thing to talk about mistakes, but these are the actual way they're going about things and think they're enhancing things.
Now, another sort of, we might as well get these all out of the way in one go since you did clump them together at the start there, Justin, but another real a real great start to the year turned sad was, of course, Daniel Bryan, who his first 3 months of 2014 were pretty much historic, and I hope they will be remembered really well, and I hope a lot of the stuff from the first third of the year and last year as well gets remembered for how good it was in spite of what things have turned into, because that stuff was really good, and it was presented by these people, and it was a very good product for the most part. And I think that should be, I hope that is remembered fondly, and I hope this Daniel Bryan run to WrestleMania in New Orleans is remembered as the great thing that it was. The feud with Triple H, which was quite goofy, the whole Daniel Bryan authority stuff in the fall of the year before, really from the point of when he was pulled away from that and did the Bray Wyatt feud and then got pulled back into it, it was really like a whole different thing altogether. Daniel Bryan had so much more momentum behind him and so much more real, true, unwavering support behind him, and the people just weren't going to take no for an answer with this guy. And Triple H and the authority, they really seemed to embrace that and really use it as a way to ramp up their heel performance, and they did a great job on their side throughout the whole thing. I remember it was one of the beatdown angles they did with Triple H, unbuttoning the shirt and laying a whooping on Daniel Bryan. That was some serious heavy-duty stuff, a lot more heavy-duty than a lot of the beatdowns you see in WWE. And, they built things up well to Mania, and then on the night itself, it delivered. They did everything they should have done that night. I thought it was absolutely perfect. And I'm going to Mania this year, but with how that Mania was, how I'm so not overwhelmed with excitement for this year's Mania, I'm kind of thinking that would have been a fitting last Mania for me to go to for a while, with how great that was.
Remember, though, this time last year, the Mania card you were looking at that you'd already committed to going to. So things can't change.
Well, if I recall, I was more optimistic on that than most.
Yeah, we did get a formal card, though, just before the Rumble, and then that all sort of changed rapidly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Your point stands, though.
So what did you guys think? Justin, we'll start with you. What did you kind of think overall of the whole Daniel Bryan road to WrestleMania, which of course went parallel to our road to WrestleMania?
I thought I was going to time this throat clear mute button with a Todd. Got it.
We can go to a Todd if you would like.
You didn't. I had the mute button on. Sorry. And it was awesome. I think the change in his presentation that you mentioned, David Bixen-Span has eloquently talked about it, sort of where you could just see when the light switched and all of a sudden the announcers, and you know who the announcers are, like speaking the hive mindset, stopped talking about Daniel Bryan, the hippie vegan goat, and started talking about him as a great fighting babyface with indomitable spirit. And then even before they had officially changed the WrestleMania card, you could sort of tell, okay, this is actually going to happen. We're so far removed from it now, I think it has sort of become taken for granted just how all the stars had to align in terms of fan will and booking coming together just to get that whole scenario. Like, Dave Bautista came in with so much fanfare. He won the Royal Rumble, which locked in that WrestleMania main event. And Daniel Bryan was going to wrestle Sheamus. And when it was all said and done, Daniel Bryan not only was in the championship match and left as champion, but got to do even more than that. So I think part of that narrative has also changed because of one god-awful show with Kane that they weren't never really behind him. And I definitely accept the doubt behind that. It'll remain to be seen. But I think that presentation of him with the Yes Movement merchandise and the way he was presented on TV gives me some optimism for Brian's push as a top guy going forward. I don't know where he's going to shake out with Mania. There's a few scenarios, but then there are the oddities throughout the year of when he was on the shelf, not bring up things like the San Francisco Giants and the amazing story with him capturing the robbers that were never mentioned on Raw and SmackDown for a second, I'm fairly certain. So that could just be that, like, out of sight, if you're not out here, fuck you, we need people on the doing the work on the chain gang here. You're either in or out, so who knows? But that's my whole thing. Mania was cool.
Yeah, I mean, as far as like the fact that they didn't talk that much about that, I think that's really interesting. Like, I'm not even sure why it was. I mean, maybe it's what you talked about, sort of the out of sight, out of mind thing. Maybe it's sort of an increasing need to feel like you create everything. So if you don't create it, we're not even going to acknowledge it. Maybe it's Brian's status. Like, he's not really our guy, so let's not really do it. But like, I feel like there was a big missed opportunity to just talk about his comeback. Like, if you just devoted 2 minutes every 2 weeks over the course of the year to the idea of Daniel Bryan trying to get back into coming back, if you just done that by the end of the year when he did come back, I feel like it would have been five times bigger, because it would have been like this big culmination, like the old school angles, you know, like when, you know, Hogan would get beat up by Bundy and Big John Studd, and he'd train for, you know, 6 months and he'd be back and, you know, here was your big comeback. Or, you know, the Shawn Michaels thing, which they, you know, created artificially by having the Owen Hart thing where you then gave him a bunch of time and then he came back for the Royal Rumble and it was a big deal. So that was a missed opportunity.
Todd, I am quite frankly sickened that you would disparage the great build they did for his return pretty much exactly as you've outlined on the series Total Divas.
Yeah, I mean, okay, maybe I've been missing out some great Total Divas action, and that's been my problem.
John Cena calling him, what did he say, Justin, you might know better than me. He
was
something
the one
about
where
it, like,
Daniel was depicted as only wanting to do like holistic stuff instead of going under the knife right away.
Yeah, Cena was like saying something. He's not going to like get better by rubbing lettuce on his arm or something like that.
Well, the irony is that
he needs to get surgery like me, brother. I was back in the ring in 2 hours.
That's just it. The John Cena comebacks—they don't even
maxed out my bench.
They don't even have time to do the big pomp and circumstance because he's back before there's even a chance to be like Cena returns and through. Oh, he's here. Never mind.
He's learned a language in his time off. Mm-hmm.
But the Triple H Beautiful Day dealio is certainly the standard bearer for that. And then the one he did again when he had the same injury a few years later. I cut them some slack.
Wait, what? I don't remember that.
Well, then remember he tore his quad again and came back to fight Booker T at SummerSlam?
Oh, like 2007-ish. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, I was thinking more immediate. Yeah, that was also the show where Rey Mysterio returned from a long injury, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did. He portrayed a fat ghost.
I was going to say he came back a little hefty, didn't he?
Yeah, his comic book character was Casper the Ghost. So I cut them some slack because of the uncertainty of, like, clearly from the beginning not knowing exactly what this injury was. And then all of a sudden it was like, guess what? Good news. But you could tell that, you know, wouldn't it even playing off last year, what a moment if they'd even held him out for the Rumble. That's not – I agree with Todd for business reasons that actually building it up is the preferred route. But to me, it seemed like he was put out on Raw in reaction to a bad rating on whatever that day was, the New Year's week, they were like, and a Daniel Bryan tease for 2/3 of the show. So, yeah, not a lot of planning went into that. One wonders how much planning goes into anything.
But with that said, with the problems with us coming back, he will always have that great run. I mean, it was a great run, as you guys brought up. I mean, this was, you know, a period where he was ridiculously over. He had all those great matches. He, you know, this guy that had been working indies for years and years and years in front of, you know, 300 people, 400 people, was, you know, the biggest star and the biggest company in the world. It was a very cool moment. And that's something that people, I think, and granted, it, you know, it sort of depends on where things go from here as far as how it's remembered. But that's going to be remembered, I think, for years to come. I mean, it very much reminded me of the Chris Benoit Eddie Guerrero thing at the end of WrestleMania 20. Obviously, you know, that was colored by, now by what happened afterwards. But it was very similar as far as, you know, just sort of the underdog, making to the top, and, you know, good for him and good for WWE going with it. I can't fault them at all for the way they went with it once it was clear that was what needed to be done.
The insanity to me is the timing of it, because it was like never blowing off Brian and the Authority bit them in the ass so hard, because if they just put Brian over at a Hell in a Cell and screwed him out of the title back to Randy 2 months later, I don't think there would have been anywhere near the groundswell of stuff. People may have like hemmed and hawed over a Batista Orton main event, but like the genie is already out of the bottle as far as the real catharsis of that, which was them inadvertently building all this heat on Brian and making him such a massive babyface. Like, they booked the perfect angle for this blow-off at WrestleMania and didn't even mean to.
Can we forever and for always put to bed the Kane as the first challenger for a new champion? It never ends well. It always results in poor things happening, and Daniel Bryan's injury and just complete disappearance from the roster for pretty much the rest of the year. I think back to, I believe, Benoit's first title defense was against Kane. Did Ray have a title defense against Kane shortly after he won the title? Or am I mad? I know he had a horrific feud with Kane that lasted about 6 months one time. But,
Is He Alive or Is He Dead, where Kane was carrying around Ray in a burlap sack for a while.
Oh, Jesus.
For a second, I was going to checkmate you because I thought of the Austin run, but Kane was his second feud rather than his first feud. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Mick Foley feud was a great first feud for Steve Austin.
Absolutely.
I remember being a kid and Austin just won the title, and I might have told this story before. Me and my friend were full attitude era mode, loved wrestling, and were at lunch in school just hashing, booking the territory, as Steve Austin would say, hashing out the booking for the next 6 months in WWF, and I was like, there's no heels. Where are all the heels? Who's Steve gonna go against? And I came up with the grand plan. The way I thought they were gonna go is that one Steve Blackman was gonna join the corporate ministry.
Whoa.
And become the top heel, and he would be Austin's main rival.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's why I should have been booking promotions in 1998.
When you said full attitude mode, I thought you were going to go with you were giving like crotch chops to the girls in your school and giving the teachers the middle finger.
Well, we didn't have girls in our school, but we were giving crotch chops to like teachers, sisters, anything in sight. My poor sister dealt with so many crotch chops throughout her teenage years. I feel very sorry in hindsight for a girl.
I have so many Blackman as top heel questions. Had he already started doing like the Shane McMahon's hitman gimmick, coming out and bloodying Ken Shamrock with the kendo stick? Or was this? Or were you completely getting full behind this guy, picking him out of obscurity?
He was... I think he had done something, because when did he have the Iron Circle match with Shamrock? That was
right.
July, Fully Loaded.
Sure.
He must have done something leading up to the like in the first few, because I know he only came in Survivor Series 97, right?
Yeah.
He must have had something that like triggered him in my mind. I think it was just the fact that he was a lethal weapon,
right?
Like that's what was needed to. That was the only thing that could be a threat to Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
A true, bona fide, lethal weapon.
Right. Said the not same thing about Shamrock being a world's most dangerous man. They're like, Steve is so dangerous. And I guess Blackman would have been the Rollins to Shamrock's Orton in the corporate. Who gives a fuck? Sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
Shamrock wasn't lethal, you see, though. Lethal takes it to a higher level.
Good
point. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. A guy who is, has this for a segue, a guy who is hoping to become somewhat of a lethal weapon when he enters the octagon is Mr. CM Phil Brooks Punk. And he had quite the newsworthy year. Well, I guess did his, yeah, his UFC announcement came before the year end. CM Punk in January, full-fledged member of the WWE roster, perhaps somewhat of a malcontent, but a guy who, gearing up for a big program going into WrestleMania, surely, then all of a sudden, he very awkwardly gets attacked by Kane in the Royal Rumble. Poor Kane. That story just made so great. Kane hiding out of, because I remember seeing him there, like, what is Kane doing? It all makes sense.
Yeah, but imagine getting a bird's eye view of him hiding behind that table like I did. I was just like, get up, man!
It was so weird. But Kane put Punk through a table and he was never to be seen again. And CM Punk walked out and CM Punk was all quiet until this past Thanksgiving when he explained all on Colt Cabana's podcast, and then of course he announced that he would be joining the UFC, and that's where we're at. Not a lot happened in CM Punk's year, but the things that happened sure were big.
He would get the, I think, even with his only 1 month of competing, probably the Time Magazine Man of the Year treatment for pro wrestling in 2014.
Yeah, it was certainly quality over quantity with regard to his news stories.
And he has to go.
What part of all that would have been most shocking to you if January 1st last year you were outlined this whole scenario?
I don't know. The anticipation for a while was that he would be finishing up in July, so I guess wasn't that unorthodox? All things considered, waking up the next day and reading that news blurb that like Punk taking off all house shows, comma quits company, comma SmackDown unmoved was it's pretty surprising in and of itself. I think it's interesting how all the news this year of I think the major stories being Punk leaving and the network and the booking of Lesnar are all sort of intertwined. So I guess we'll have to segue into that at some point. I think the aura of the Punk story would have a lot more mystery behind it if he hadn't done that podcast, because say what you will, but it's not like there's really too many questions about who's and why's and speculations of like he was and outlandish theories of a man who inspires truly the weirdest reactions among any prominent figures in professional wrestling. But not too many people do what he did in terms of walking out on a very mind control heavy company who gets people to march in place, let alone just before WrestleMania season in the fashion that he did.
Did you guys see that Q&A he did at the last UFC?
No, sir.
I haven't really seen much of his stuff since the first week, because I realized by the end of the first week that he had a very limited amount of things to say, and I felt I'd heard them all already, and I haven't rechecked on anything since.
That was one of the most surreal things I've ever seen. It was preposterous. It was so funny. Like, they did this thing. It was like just a Q&A before the weigh-ins, and it was like 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock, somewhere around there, Vegas time, and a good, I'd say 50 to 75% of the people that asked questions were drunk, with beers in their hand, just out of it, you know, asking these just preposterous questions of him.
Hey, Phil!
It was, I mean, there was a guy who said that he was a fan of him all the way back to his ROW days. There was a guy who, you know, was asking about the Green Power Ranger, you know, the guy who wanted him to, like, wish his friend well. And so, you know, like, Punk's like, okay, I wish your friend well. You know, like, it was just one ridiculous question after another. The whole thing is so surreal, of CM Punk thinking that he's going to be a UFC fighter. I'm curious how it goes, but it certainly feels like a waste of the guy, given that he's such a good pro wrestling performer and he would add so much to pro wrestling. And, you know, he's often in UFC where I don't think he can contribute nearly so much. So I think it's just sort of a sad story, really.
Do you think he had much more to give with the way his body apparently was, or do you think the fact that he's doing MMA just completely throws that out the window?
It's hard to say, not like being in his place, but like I've seen a lot of people that were really beat up with their bodies that were still able to manage to do stuff over years. And like, to me, the best thing about Punk was his promos, and he could keep doing those in pro wrestling for, you know, for years to come, regardless of whether he could have the same quality of matches that he once did. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of gas in the tank, even if he would have to sort of switch his modus operandi.
I'd love to see him as a commentator if he could never wrestle again. Certainly considering the way our commentary team seems to be going on Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, how about him and Paul Heyman as a team? That would be great.
I don't know if they'd work as a duo, because like you'd have to have a play-by-play guy in there, and there's no way the play-by-play guy would get a word in edgeways, and I think Punk and Heyman would just be kind of talking over each other a little bit, but I think it would be awesome to have like Punk on one commentary team with a play-by-play guy, and you could have like any of those. Like, I'd be perfectly fine with any of those generic straight-laced play-by-play guys from Cole on down to the new guys, with on one side with Punk and on the other side with Heyman. I'd be all on board those commentary teams.
Well, the nice thing about Punk and I'm sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Mine was sort of spurious. I think the best possible use of Heyman Punk three-man booth would have to be if Renee was play-by-play, right? Wouldn't they have the best dynamic? Like, say, Renee is not exactly the ideal play-by-play, but her with them, they have a great rapport. Also, now that I think about it, I think you can trace, like, 2001 is the period when the wrestling boom ended, and then different points throughout the decade of the 2000s were changeovers to, you know, a John Cena era, drug testing, PG. But I think the one we're in now and the weaknesses that have gotten exacerbated are not necessarily things that started in 2001, although that, you know, things like the way the writing staff is constructed and the TV is put together has only become more of a monster. It turns into a monster over this time. But the announcing you bring up, with the putting out of Jim Ross to pasture, and then when using him, making it insufferable TV that just had them bickering with him on air, combined with the heel Michael Cole guy.
That was the worst. We haven't, for as bad and as critical as people are the announcing right now, we haven't come close to that 2010. It was 2010, right?
Yeah.
We haven't come close to that. But if you want to appreciate the announcing we have now, and really, why would you? But if you did, for some reason, want to gain the appreciation for them, go back and watch that stuff, and you probably will appreciate what we have now.
The decline I would trace back to then, though, is the announcers progressively caring less and less, and then you move in 2012 to 3 hours, and they just sort of checked out after a few months of that. Thank you.
Yeah, I was never, you mentioned Trier's there. I was never a, like, I was never too bothered by the Trier thing. I didn't think it was as big a problem as some people kind of talked about, but I could see their point. But in hindsight, like, yeah, I think that's right on, that Trier's is a huge mistake, and we're really seeing some of the problems of that come to light down the road here now. It's pretty bad, and you can see where it's really damaged things. I don't think it needs to be that difficult. I think you could put together a good 3-hour show every week, but I think for this company and the way they operate, an impossible task.
I think it would be pretty hard for anyone to put together a good 3-hour show every single week.
Really?
That's challenging.
I disagree, Todd. I think you could. Variety is the spice of life. I think you could get a little bit of. There's a lot of things you can put onto a wrestling show that could maintain an audience's interest. Like, you could have a 20 to 25 minute killer match every single week. Like, given serious time, you could have a couple other matches with sort of shorter time, but still given a chance to go out there and shine. You could have really good, strong video packages like a Daniel Bryan Road to Recovery, like a Here's What Happened Last Week on NXT, like a Here's This Profile of This Guy Outside of the Ring. Different things that are realistic and dramatic and not insulting your intelligence. And you could have some good in-ring promo segments with guys being left off the cuff and not having to read scripted promos that don't fit their characters. Let them go out and be creative. You could have throw in like a flashback from the vault type thing to hype something on the network. And not to mention like just all like other kind of random things that you'd have on the show. It's I think it would be very easy to fill 3 hours, and plus you got commercials in there. It's really only like what, 2 hours 20 minutes? No problem at all. Think of all the good 3-hour pay-per-views we've seen. Like, it would be easy if you were
easy,
competent.
Is saying a lot.
Justin, I could do it. I could do it in my sleep. I'm sorry. It is like,
take out your napkin, Eddie Gilbert. Let's have this segment one. Here we go. Pyro and Bally. And go.
If I got, okay, my current job.
I feel you maybe overstayed the point a little bit, Brian.
I'm telling you.
You could not tell me that we can't have a great show every week.
If my boss came into me on Monday morning and said, Alan, listen, I know this makes no sense whatsoever, but I just got off the phone with Vince McMahon, and he's told me that from now on, you're not going to have to do any work with us on a Wednesday afternoon. You can stay in the office, but no one's going to bother you. You just sit there, and from 1:30 until 5:30, you can book a 3-hour show for Vince every week. I would say, I don't even need that long. And I would do a hell of a job every week, and I can promise you that.
Let me say one thing, though.
It's not that hard!
I was going to start banging on the desk like Russo. But, one of the things that has, I think, happened this year more than anything is that we went through a period of time with the Shield's long matches on TV, and Daniel Bryan, who... His big top babyface push to SummerSlam 2013, I mean, people loved Yes, but he got over working long TV matches with The Shield is what really got his momentum stand out on TV. But this year, whether, you know, the quality of matches they've put on has gone down, I don't know if that's true because they still have a lot of horses who they can send out there who can put on a match, but they rely so much more on the crash to break 2-segment match on Raw, just out of like having nothing else to do to fill out like the vast desert between the top of the hour segments that they anchor the show with at 9, 10, and 11. So there is so many of those long matches now, and so few of them have anything resembling heat, even when they go to the finish.
Yeah, I just think 3 hours is too long.
For a wrestling show, yes. For a podcast, perfect amount of time.
All right, look, guys, let's so when we don't go 3 hours, let's move on to another topic here.
Sorry, can I ask you one thing related to Punk? And I think this ties into our 3 hour podcast. So he has to be a viable Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame candidate now because Dana White gave him an unprecedented contract, you know? Unprecedented contract equals Hall of Fame. With or without doing professional wrestling on a regular basis. Unprecedented contract.
If Punk goes in and makes a huge impact in UFC to anywhere close to the degree Brock did, as far as like
and I can
gaining
tell you,
interest
that'll
in the product,
probably happen. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the second half of what you said. Yes, I understand what you mean.
I don't think Punk is gonna be a blip on the radar in UFC. I think it's gonna be a very short, ugly experience, and I think it will be done and dusted very quickly, and people will realize, all involved will realize it was quite a big mistake. That is where, I'm not saying that's a lock, definitely going to happen, but if I had to put my money on one outcome, that would be it. And I think that will really, in fact, hurt his Hall of Fame chances, but because it'll just be kind of an embarrassing thing. It was, could have been a big thing for him, or he would have wanted it to be a big thing. But
I think that's what's going to happen, too.
Yeah, and that will be sad. But do you know what's not sad? Do you know what's the one thing on here which I don't think is a good going to bad story? I think it's a bad going to good story. I think this is one of the happiest stories of the year.
I hope you're not going to say the death of Sean O'Hare.
Mac Van was indeed unmoved. No, I wasn't, but I was going
to
mention.
Well, that's good, because that would have been a mean thing to say.
And then we know how you feel at mean people and mean things. Batista.
Mm.
Blutista.
Blutista?
Turned from, basically, he went from Blutista to Blutista to
Greentista.
I want to be in his shoe, Tista. I guess, you know, like filming Bond movies and looking all happy and awesome and just cool. And like, Batista was always cool, but you know, when he came back at the start of the year and the crowd turned on him, kind of got a little bit sad. It was like kind of sad old man kind of vibe. And it was like, ugh, old man thinks he's cooler than he is. People aren't digging him. At the same time, I thought he was in an awkward position. I thought the whole thing was unfair on Batista, and I thought he was being used badly. And I was like, this is not ideal. But it was still quite a bad start to the year for him. And now it's like the guy is just he's awesome. I love him. That movie was great. He was great in it. And now he's getting all these opportunities. And his like the last time he left WWE, his like last month or so on television, he was fantastic. As a heel with Evolution, he was great. I would argue he was the MVP of the Evolution Shield feud.
Yeah, it's nice when the fans get their comeuppance. Sorry, go ahead.
I love it. That, I was one of those fans. I started it all.
Well, how can you hate on poor Batista? I've always had sort of a soft spot in my heart for the guy. And you know, like you said, Alan, he got shit on so much earlier in the year, and then he totally got the last laugh by, you know, I think having his best stuff, generally having good stuff towards the end of his WWE run, and then more importantly, he had, you know, the biggest box office smash of the year, and really, you know, open up a lot of opportunities for him, and you know, things are looking up, and he can just, you know, move on and chuckle at all those ungrateful wrestling fans who shit on him when he tried to come back into their lives and bring them joy.
I don't think there's any question. It was a case of wrong place at wrong time, and his timing was sort of off at the beginning, and I agree with you guys. The shame of it is that, like, he had, including in the ring, really started to hit his stride just when he was wrapping up, he went out with like 3 Dave Meltzer rated 4.5-star pay-per-view matches, which is not bad for the guy who was out there with Alberto Del Rio getting booed as a babyface. But yeah, that's going in the same way they accidentally, the WWE did, made Daniel Bryan the perfect babyface. They made Dave Bautista such a massive heel to their audience to headline WrestleMania with. Because there was a point before he had formally turned that Dave was like impromptu trying to put together a revised WrestleMania card, and then he got to Batista and he said, "And I don't even know what you do with Batista. I guess you just tell him to go home. Sorry, man."
You know, I think I shortchanged him because I said he was like for the last month really good, but I think pretty much from the point that they embraced the heel turn with him and he started showing up on SmackDown wearing awesome clothes and slagging Dolph Ziggler, I think from that point on he was pretty much money.
And he gets it because he said on Jericho's podcast he wanted to come back as a heel, and they were like, "People are going to love you." So, Dave and the fans, ironically, were on the same page, but they were pitted against each other.
And he's cool, and we're allowed to like him because he sat on Punk's couch.
Too true, too true.
And really, Bautista really was one of the highlights of the entire year.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I want to be in his shoe, Tista, though. What a guy. Part of the irony of the big convergence of events and stars aligning with Brian is also with the crowd psychology of the WWE universe. I really think if they'd brought him back as a surprise, people have been like too shocked and excited to like have a surprise over deliver from their expectations. He would have been cheered as he won that Royal Rumble, even if Daniel Bryan wasn't in it.
That's an interesting point. I'm not sure about that, but I think I agree with you. Yeah, I think if he'd come back as a big surprise, people might have just forgiven the whole thing.
But enough time, and you may or may not be seeing that now with people's preemptive strikes against Roman Reigns, is that they had his return and the fact that he was getting the title match spot had come out before the Rumble. So enough people there knew or saw the writing on the wall that it was like, hang on a second, not so fast.
Now, someone who did come back as somewhat of a surprise this year was the Stinger, finally stepping foot inside a WWE arena at the close of Survivor Series to help Team Cena beat Team Authority, Dolph Ziggler's shining moment, and really something that now, 2 months later, has kind of lost a lot of its meaning and a lot of its... I don't know, it doesn't seem like it would have much heat now, a Triple H versus Sting feud, because...
But what if
Triple
he accomplished?
It was gone. Got a nice holiday. Gave Triple H a nice holiday, that was nice of him. What did you guys think of the overall angle, the way it was executed, how Sting looked out there in terms of his presence on a WWE stage, and... Where you kind of see it going from here, without going too much into the future, because of course this is a 2014 review show. But was the debut kind of what you'd hoped for it, Justin?
Let me go second because I have sort of a tangential point, so it'll take us perpendicular.
Granted.
Thank you,
Todd.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead then and save Justin for later. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was basically what you'd expect. I mean, he came back. It was fun. It was cool. They put in a good match, so that worked well. People were happy to see Sting. It wasn't like he was, the crickets came out, and people were like, "Who's the old guy?" So that was a positive. And, I think ultimately what people are going to remember about Sting is how the culmination match ends up. I think if he has a great match with Hunter, or at least even just sort of a fun match that people enjoy and sort of works for what it is, then I think people will remember it, sort of a happy memory. And I think if that turns out to be not very good, I think people are going to not remember that very well.
When did Sting finish up with TNA? Like last January? So we were...
I want to say it was later, but maybe it wasn't.
Okay, because I know And Dave had started hinting about it, that, like, this could actually be the time that Sting and WWE, TNA's not paying its people anymore, because Hogan left and showed up in January, February, whatever it was. So started to get the writing on the wall, and then the video game commercial, I think, is when it became pretty clear that this was going to happen.
That was during the summer, wasn't it?
Right. So my thinking was, like, in this scorched earth sort of environment of wrestling, Sting in WWE, I don't know how good it can be with Sting at 56, 55, whatever he is, but it may as well happen. Like, that's something I can see before I pass from this earthly realm. So that was definitely a novelty, and I think the execution was good. There are some red flags in just his single appearance that kind of make you wonder, like, if you thought something like Bret Hart versus Vince at 26 was close to foolproof, and then you saw the inventive ways they found to to make it slightly less foolproof. So things like changing his music and the Vigilante Sting branding, you're kind of like, we'll see. But part of the excitement of Sting for me also was seeing what they're at least close to state-of-the-art production team could do with, like, the Sting character, since he's not so much playing real estate Steve Borden, 55-year-old man with a comb-over, as he is, like, Sting, an immortal magical figure. So we'll see how that goes.
A vigilante, if you will.
Oh, sure, I will.
When you frame it that way, Justin, the second really does sound much more exciting.
Him standing there facially, he did look fairly old, but I think since this really may be a single match, that there's enough kind of like wrestling pixie dust there to get through it. And the idea of him versus Triple H as opposed to versus Undertaker is probably a conversation for a future show.
Now, Sting's tag team partner unexpectedly returned to the WWE this year as well, and I'm not talking about Lex Luger, although that would too be unexpected, but The Rock, Ultimate Warrior, the other half of the Blade Runners, made his return, made amends, did a DVD, did a documentary, Hall of Fame, main eventer.
And that's when I stopped paying attention. So a great story, and really an uplifting one.
It was really something. I was, I had just landed in London, because we flew from New Orleans to London, and then it was London to Dublin, and we got some Wi-Fi when we landed in London, and it was like, it's like in the space of time when we were on that flight, it happened, and he passed away, and it was like, holy shit, like, we could not believe that this was actually a real thing that had happened. It was just, the timing was just too crazy. And, it was, again, going back to how news heavy a year this was, I feel like this story has kind of got forgotten, not forgotten about, but kind of got swept up amongst all these other stories, because I know you put this in a lot of years. This is something that just number 1A talking point of the year, because this was a crazy, crazy deal, what happened with Ultimate Warrior. It was really sad, but his speech at Raw, that was something else. And, like, I've never been, like, a big Warrior guy. Like, I've had a lot of the criticisms over the last decade or so that a lot of people would have had about him. But when he came back into that speech, you could clearly see it was a guy who was pouring his heart and soul out, and he was passionate, and he wasn't giving you bullshit. He was his true legit emotions, and you couldn't help but respect the guy for that speech. And I was applauding it at the end of it. Like, I thought it was a great deal, and I'm glad he was able to go out like that and have that moment before passing on. But it was sad that he did have to pass on right after it. So I'm very unfortunate.
Yeah, what a crazy story. I mean, just the timing of the whole thing.
It's mental. Like, it really is when you think about it. It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's really the sort of thing where, like, the timing of those things usually, like, lead to, like, speculation that the person faked their death. when you see that sort of thing. I mean, the nice thing about the whole thing was that, you know, he really did seem to be in a better place than he'd been in years and years. You know, he came back, not that he needed to come back, but in the sense that I think it sort of served as sort of a closing of a sort of a chapter of ugliness between him and a bunch of people. And, you know, I think he was going to continue to likely be sort of a prickly person to deal with in the years that come, but I think he'd sort of, you know, he'd let a lot of stuff go when he was in a better place. And I think there's something to be said for that, you know, just getting sort of in a better place before the end, not sort of leaving with a bunch of, you know, anger and hostility towards a bunch of different people. So it was a sad story in some ways. And it was sort of an oddly positive story in other ways. You would have liked anyone to have more time, given that he wasn't that old. But, the way it concluded seemed sort of, oddly nice.
And nothing I can add about the A, tragic, and B, just surreal nature of all of that. I think he, in a very minor sense relative to what happened, but at least related to, like, a tracking WWE podcast program, as one might record, is we had in consecutive years Bruno, Warrior, and Savage going into the Hall of Fame, which has really taken us into an era of, like, transcending grudges where it's not even that WWE necessarily forgives those, you know, Vince, whatever you want to call it. For
God, maybe Lex Luger will come back.
Well, he's already...
Nails next year.
I was going to culminate with China as the far example, but I think you've trumped me there.
Wait, I couldn't... You guys are talking over each other. What'd you say there? American males?
Yeah.
I'm serious. That's what I heard.
That'd be another...
wrestling tease. That American nails mashup, that's money.
American males in the WWE Hall of Fame. I'm definitely pro that as well, but I said nails.
Oh, okay. That's even better. I hope they show clips of what I consider the worst match I've ever seen. It was nails in, I guess it would be New Japan World that would go up on, not WWE Network, but nails in New Japan in a tag match, which also involved Ron Simmons, I believe. The worst wrestling match I've ever seen. I think I put it on Daily Motion. It's probably up there if anyone wants to see it. It's an absolute abysmal, abhorrent train wreck of a match. But, kind of fits along with Nails, Kevin Kelly, the character. Not Ring of Honor Kevin Kelly. He's not an important person.
What I was bringing that up for was one of the WWE-specific trends this year, in relation to Warrior going in and San Martino going in and maybe Savage going in. I don't really know who formally put them and Lanny like on the same page, but the story of businessman Paulie L closing them deals for one thing, and then the idea of Triple H as sort of the good cop to Vince's bad cop aesthetically has really took off this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's sort of two stories there. One is sort of the what you just brought up, the Paul Levesque sort of becoming the sort of the good cop to the bad cop, and sort of being used as sort of viewed as sort of the positive sort of force going forward. But the other that sort of fits into that, and something else that I think was a big story of the year, was people finally sort of losing faith in Vince McMahon. I mean, that's something that some people have talked about for a while, myself included among them, but I felt like that didn't really get a lot of traction until this year. I mean, this was a year when people talked about the WWE in negative terms. You started seeing a lot more of Vince needs to go, Vince is the problem, you know, negative remarks
you
about
had
Vince.
That dichotomy of NXT this year, which is sort of, for right or wrong, kind of thought of as the Triple H production, and it's so beloved by people, especially people who only watch the 4 live specials a year and don't really see the meat between that, which can be hit or miss, but they've knocked it out of the park on every one of those live specials. And the dichotomy of that versus what's kind of seen as the Vince product, especially in recent months, pretty huge.
Yep. Let's talk about the NXT thing when you get a chance, because that was clearly one of the
yeah,
more positive.
For sure.
But yeah,
keep going on Vince.
The Vince as Al Davis metaphor is your intellectual property, Todd. And this is not the first year you've run with it. It's the first year I've been fully on board, though. Like I always thought,
no, I didn't win you over back in 1999 when I was being.
I was gonna say like 01 to I don't know, even last year Vince was a guy, and it has gotten like progressively sketchier over that time with certain things. I always found him like, you know what Vince's quirks are, you know he's impatient, you know, like the week by week nature makes things erratic. And this was the year where I was like, no, there's like definitely no like even flawed logic necessarily tying these things together. And was it not during the broadcast on the network of the Austin podcast when, I don't know what statement he made, Todd, you formally tweeted like, that about settles it, Vince has got to go.
Yeah, I don't remember what I exactly said, but yeah, that was a bad night for Vince McMahon, that Austin podcast.
I know it was the Cesaro moment, speaking of things that could go down its own alley, when he's Austin, in a not exactly less than leading way, is like, so I'm starting to like this guy, and then you did this with him, and then you did this with him, and then not much is going on, just as I was starting to get behind him, so like, what do you think happened? And Vince's answer was something like, you know, I don't know what he did wrong in spite of all the ways we tried to help him. And I almost threw my, like, remote control through my TV when that happened. It was just like, God, man, for real? So, yeah. Vince McMahon. Then, you know, and it's not as maybe fun, entertaining conversation to talk about, but Vince is also the leadership behind, I don't think you can call it anything more than like a massive carny bubble behind like the hype. And maybe it's not even carny, because they, I believe, wholeheartedly believed what they were capable of getting in terms of network subscribers and the TV deal. So like, it's not like they gained anything by lying to people, because the bottom was always going to fall out on that. It was like they must have been as caught off guard as anybody, and like so happy and being like, yay, let the good times roll, like that story Meltzer tells about like Pat Patterson telling him like, yeah we're doing pretty good right now, and then when we get bigger than the NFL, here's what we're gonna do. Where so yeah, now I know maybe oh, what's that guy's name? Who is the guy who gave the speech? He has a cool name at the network presentation, who later, he was behind the network and now. Perkins Miller! Hell yeah. Perkins Miller. He might be a good candidate for the wrestling time.
You were so excited to get that name.
Hell yeah. Perkins Miller. Perkins Miller is a great dude. Seaman Canyon is the best name. But anyway, so I know that.
Who is that, by the way? I don't know. I've heard that name before.
He's one of Triple H's underlings with Jane.
He's the guy with Jane. Justin's on like buddy terms with Jane. First name.
Toronto. That
he's Canyon is. He was like the guy, sort of bad cop then in NXT, kind of. Did a lot of people. He is sometimes known as Volleyball Dude.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh,
well, that guy.
Due to his background.
Wait, so I must have just read his name differently. His name is. His name. What is his name?
Well.
Canyon Seaman, or known to others as Seaman Canyon.
Aha. Okay. So that's probably why I was not reading it the same way.
Right. Yep. As it was his famous catchphrase. Who. Forgetter than Canyon Seaman. What was I? Oh, yeah. So, never mind. Vince had insulated Stephanie with George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, but it's still the buck stops with him as far as their financial embarrassments this year. Good day.
Someone who had a couple of good days this year. I'm doing well with this. I like to think I'm doing well with the segue.
That was an epic segue right there.
I haven't even segued what we're segueing into, and I'm already praising myself. But we're past midnight here, my time, and I am just
churning
out the we're not going to talk about them.
You know, I'm actually having a 7:30 p.m. cup of coffee right now, and I got to say, I like my coffee like I like the new day on the shelf for 3 months.
that needed more of a pause there.
I had to dive on the grenade as soon as possible. New day? Proceed, Alan.
Justin, are you sweating?
You know, that caffeine with no hydration will get you.
Justin, what was your great joke you had in the email, Fred? There was just one, come on. I offered we should play a game of stock up, stock down on the WWE roster this year, which we probably won't do for time constraints. But what was your comment and reply to that?
I guess that's just what I was talking about. That's a game they played on themselves.
All year.
They worked themselves into a chute and ladder.
So my great segue, that was one of many that I'm churning out here after midnight, I can't even remember what it was. Someone having a good day,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, guy who had a couple of real good days this year, Brock Lesnar. He ended the streak. That was kind of a big deal. That could be the biggest story of the year in a lot of years. And he soundly, humiliatingly, vociferously defeated John Cena, world champion John Cena, in just one of the most one-sided, dominant titles. Basically, I was going to say one of ever, but really this was the only match ever like this. It's crazy. And Brock with two huge moments, but here at the end of the year, the beginning of the new year, it doesn't feel like he's any hotter than he... I think you kind of mentioned this earlier, but it doesn't feel like he's any hotter than he was 12 months ago. And that's quite staggering.
Staggering, sniveling, suck up, sell out, suffering, succotash, son. You were doing sort of like a Heyman Muhammad Ali rap for your client Brock Lesnar, which inspired me to remember that good stuff. Yeah, isn't it? I mean, as soon as April, people, as I said, caught on and then it was corroborated, there's a plan of succession. Lesnar breaks the streak, and then since a lot of the controversy of that streak breaking was always the fans will hate the guy too much to even benefit from it. It was sort of like you break the Undertaker's streak and then you transfer it through the transitive property of Brock to Roman Reigns so that Reigns beats the one behind the one, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. It I can't even say it didn't seem like a logical and sound idea at the time. I saw, like, it made sense if you were really invested in Roman Reigns. And maybe this is taking you further ahead than you want to talk about, but the real story and the cooling off for him came after they put the title on him. Even then, I think people were, like, curious and optimistic about what that could do for him and the title as special attractions that would actually become bigger deals because they weren't on TV. And then, in fact, just the opposite happened. They kind of, like, flattened out both the title and Brock as anything special by very cowardly, like, ignoring their very idea to pull them off not just house shows but TV entirely. And so then it was just like, yes, this is the status quo of life where neither Brock and a title exist. So now that he's back here to fulfill the whole reason they put all that equity of Undertaker and Cena behind him, fair amount of people don't even think he's going to hold the title past the Royal Rumble anymore.
The thing that strikes me about Brock is that, and this goes back to something we were talking about earlier, of the Daniel Bryan thing, of like, I feel like, and to sort of the amount of programming they put on, is I feel like the Brock Lesnar and John Cena thing in particular, but also the Brock Lesnar and Undertaker thing, if they weren't producing so much television that you sort of had more time for sort of things to settle and then to build up to the next thing, I feel like particularly the Brock Lesnar and John Cena thing, that really should have been a historic thing. Like the idea of – I mean, it's really sort of something unprecedented. You have this babyface who's been, you know, beating everyone for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. And finally, this heel just completely and utterly destroys him. It was so unique and so different that, like, really, I feel like that should have been one of the things that people remember most about the year. And I feel like people don't even remember it. I will say one thing positive about it, though, is that, like, I feel like there was a lot of catharsis of the whole thing. Because I felt it myself. Like, I had nothing against John Cena the person, but John Cena the character, you know, like, I just want that to happen every night to the guy. Like, I'm so sick of him. You know, I just want him. The same thing with Stephanie McMahon, by the way. Like, nothing against Stephanie McMahon the person, but, like, I'm ready for Balls Mahoney to come in and take her out with a chair. So John Cena is
getting concerto with Masato Tanaka on the other side.
Yes. The character, not the person, the character. John Cena, I feel like has been gotten a lot of hostility for years and years and years. I just did that before. But I felt like after the point that he lost to Brock Lesnar, there's been less of a backlash to him. There hasn't been as much hostility in the fan reactions. He hasn't been booed as much. I'm not sure if that's connected to the Brock Lesnar thing, but I sort of wonder if it is, because it really did sort of offer up a catharsis. Maybe it made people ease up a little bit, and there hasn't been as much of a backlash to John Cena since then.
Also, a weird year in general, Cena-wise. I don't think at all the Bray Wyatt program preceding his match with Lesnar helped that perception, because, you know, the things people remember from it are him winning at WrestleMania when they would have probably preferred he not, and then Ghost Child, similar to the one Rey Mysterio embodied at SummerSlam 06, cost him a cage match that was a very bad and, like, illogically laid out match. And they did have a pretty great brawl after that, but by then few people really cared. But that was also the feud, you know, where all the psychology was off and Bray Wyatt was acting like a babyface. And now here we are, the week we're recording this, and John Cena's one of the bigger idiots imaginable, based on the genie's wish logic of wrestling, bringing back the authority, and him being John Cena, I'm sure he might have a last laugh, but the way he's been handled this year, I don't even know. The year started with him, like, repeatedly losing matches to Randy Orton to set up Bray, and then you had the Bray feud with the oddities I just brought up, and then the Brock squashing, and I guess the fact that he, as people feared, sort of just, like, shrugged it off. He was very sad for a week, and I but after that, he was, like, just back in the fight.
Was he very sad?
No.
Was he laid out all the Wyatts? He seemed,
now that you mention it,
comfortable enough with things.
Well, after he lost to Brock, at least, he was very mad. He was a mad man,
yes.
Remember?
Mm-hmm.
It was a slightly different reaction than we usually get from him, but
definitely.
I'm
sorry, but I guess Brock is probably a bigger story than Cena, and I'm sorry to take you off that. Brock would also maybe even more than Punk have a good case for the magazine cover. And I just wonder, like, do you think before the subscription?
I was gonna say. On paper, he is, and then I realized on paper, magazine cover.
But the e-reader of the Kindle version of our podcast can have the Kindle version of our podcast. Sometimes I just say a series of words that occur to me. But do you think they had intentions of using Brock between September and January, like paying him to work more matches? And then the network subscription numbers came in, and they realized very quickly it was highly cost prohibitive, and just figured, well, never mind. We'll see you in January.
I don't know. I think,
because if they had their 3 million expected worldwide subscribers, then yeah, using him as a network pay per view special event attraction pays for itself.
I'll tell you what I think happened while you're thinking about it, Alan. I think what happened is they concluded that Brock Lesnar's leaving. At that point, they sort of lost interest in doing much with it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that was another thing about, like, the UFC thing. Like, everybody I talked to, the weekend before last at the UFC event thought that Brock was going back to the UFC, like everybody. So I think in WWE, like their mentality is, you know, this guy is gone, so let's not build around him. And I think it's kind of a waste. I think you're better off sort of, using him as much as you can to use sort of like an analogy to sports. It's sort of like the Kevin Love thing going on in Cleveland right now, or the year that Dwight Howard was in LA. Like, you're much better off trying to like keep someone happy and seeing if they can be used after that point, or just taking advantage of them while they're there than sort of, essentially throwing in the towel because you get frustrated.
So very much cutting off your nose despite your heel, because like you're the ones who you already blew the streak. Like, that's the biggest thing possible. And I remember like the thought process in when it happened was like, well, now they'll definitely re-sign him behind this remaining year because they got to use him as the guy who did this as a big attraction, even if it's working the same schedule. Like, just such a critical part of like the fabric of WWE history now. And now we're sitting at a point where it's very feasible that if Undertaker has a retirement match at Texas Stadium, then the Undertaker will be wrestling matches in WWE after Brock Lesnar has stopped wrestling matches in WWE.
Todd, question for you. January, February 2012. Someone says to you, Todd, what are you more excited about, the prospect of another Brock Lesnar fight here in the UFC against whoever, whatever name, heavyweight you want to pick, or Brock Lesnar returning to WWE? What would your answer have been?
I think WWE, just in the sense that, like, at that point in time, I sort of thought that Brock Lesnar had lost interest in fighting, so I didn't think that there was that much that would really be accomplished. I hesitate because, obviously, there's sort of an excitement to me of a big fight that isn't really there for even sort of the biggest wrestling events, because you don't know what's going to happen. So you've got, these guys coming out there and someone's going to get their ass kicked. So
they're going to get their wig split.
Yes. Jeez, I wish I could remember.
You've pretty much given me the answer I was kind of expecting there. It was a close call, basically, between the two for you. You would have been excited in theory by the prospect of both.
Yeah. I mean, to different
now, degrees. 3 years later, here we are after Brock has been 3 years under the WWE umbrella for them to utilize him how best they see fit. And here he is coming to the end of his contract. Would you be more interested in Brock Lesnar back in the MMA scene with whatever matchups he'd have potentially there now, or Brock Lesnar continuing on this path in WWE?
This may surprise you, but I think the answer actually is still, again, WWE. Just in the sense
really?
Of, like,
oh, okay.
Because I think if he goes back to MMA, they're going to feed him some not particularly interesting matchups. I don't really need to see him against Frank Mir again. And in WWE, I think there would be some interesting stuff for him to do. So I actually would be more interested in WWE. But I don't know. I mean, the thing of it is my premise there is that I don't think Brock really wants to fight again. But if he signs with UFC, then I think that sort of does indicate that he does want to fight again. So
I'm not really basing this on anything more than just kind of my general own personal feel for the situation. I think he definitely wants to go back to UFC, and I think he definitely will.
It's kind of the same logic, but with a correspondingly far higher like quality of competition that you said with Punk, where he just has so much to contribute to wrestling that it's a shame we're losing those years of his, I guess, still his prime. Sure.
All right, guys. I was actually just going to say I need to get my battery, so I'm going to introduce a topic and let you talk. But if you have more to talk about Brock, you go do that, and I'll get my battery.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you go back to that January, February 2012 when he first signed. Well, he signed, like, that WrestleMania weekend or shortly before that. And the anticipation people had for Brock Lesnar dream matches, the idea of him wrestling The Rock, which I guess was relatively close to happening and now looks like it never will, and then the teased notion of him being like the elusive opponent Steve Austin would come out of retirement for. And I guess part of the excitement then was the idea of him and the Undertaker streak with a far different build-up and more protected Brock going into it. And now his contract has two more matches on it, and we're going to end up with, let's see, however many total matches, 13 or 14, and then four of those are against John Cena, three of them were against Triple H. If we get a Daniel Bryan match, maybe I'll call it even, which I still can't rule out, but yeah, Brock Lesnar.
Even though when he's doing matches against the same opponents, it's just fun having him come out on television and destroy people and look scary and have Paul Heyman cut promos. I just enjoy the whole package. Whereas Brock Lesnar, I don't see him having a lot of fun fights in MMA. I just think it's going to be either sort of lackluster wins over not particularly good oppositions or getting handled by better opposition.
Yeah, the asset management of him is one thing, but when you and me and Alan do a podcast talking about WWE, I think the short list of highlights of the last 3 years, he's on a lot of them.
Absolutely.
Not all of his matches have been the same caliber of the first Cena match and the Punk match, but the angles, like you said, on TV, and then moments like breaking the streak and the follow-up to that, at least the initial follow-up to that.
Oh, he's great. He delivers, but they just don't get the most out of him, I don't think.
Right. And, well, like, look where we are. The whole year was in service of the sacrifices and taking the belt off the road for Roman Reigns to win the title in a big stadium in a match that was supposed to be, like, the combination of Hogan, Iron Sheik, and Hogan, Andre the Giant. And, current projections indicate that will not be occurring. Whether the match happens or not.
Current projections.
Mm-hmm.
Now, guys, we have a few sort of more smaller news story type topics that we can throw in here and kind of do a quick kind of run through. This one is actually a fairly big one, I suppose. The WWE Network and the rollout, how it's gone so far, what we've all thought about it. I, of course, haven't had it until, just now, in the next week, I'll be getting it, and I can't wait to dip my toe into it as a member of the UK and Ireland demographic. But
the main event!
Yeah, that's hilarious. I loved Dave's breakdown of that on the Observer Radio during the week of WWE just being so foolish negotiating this contract and how to them, a contract is something that you must live up to, but they don't need to. Just so perfect. And if I could maybe even put one piece of discussion about WWE to just exemplify what this company is all about, it would be that. Network as a whole, like, to me, I find it, like, I hear people criticize it about, like, certain content not being up there and things that went up, like, say, ECW went up for, like, I don't know, 60 weeks of ECW and they just stopped the cold and this and that. And it's all valid criticisms, and I get that. And if I, say, like, if I was, like, in school or college and I had my summer holidays and I could literally just watch the network all day, every day, I'd probably be giving out about that too. But, with the limited time I have to, like, watch stuff on the network, because, I mean, in my free time, I'm trying to, like, fit in loads of other wrestling that I try to watch as well. So,
I like the end of the story, by the way, is, like, it seemed to be building towards you having a more balanced life, but in fact, you're just like, there's a bunch of other wrestling that I've got to watch, too.
Oh, no, I meant I was actually trying to get across in addition to all the, like, other things, like, I don't know, a full-time job and, like, family and stuff like that, but yeah, mainly like Noah and Draggate. So for me, there's more than enough there, and like people are going crazy about New Japan World, and it's like New Japan World's awesome too, don't get me wrong, but the selection of a New Japan World is extremely limited compared to WWE Network. It's not even close. The network, as far as amount of content up there, blows New Japan World and the water. Quality may not be matching quantity, but I'm really enjoying going through like all the late 80s NWA, WCW stuff, seeing a lot of that for the first time. I'm enjoying just watching random Raws from 93 whenever I feel so inclined. That's an urge that just randomly strikes me as it's like my childhood wrestling. And yeah, it's I've enjoyed it like from a personal just enjoyment standpoint. Two big thumbs up. More than get my money's worth with it. No problems at all with it. From a business standpoint and observing WWE and how they handled the whole thing and their business, monumental disaster. Would you guys be in the same boat as me there, or where is there certain shortcomings? For me, the one shortcoming was the functionality of the thing, and they've improved certain aspects of that, but it still can be a bit annoying. But other than that, I find no real issues with it.
I am not holding it to an especially high standard. For me, the deal is enough. Like, I accept paying $10 a month to watch every pay-per-view not on a stream. In the year before this, it had gotten to the point where I felt like the only pay-per-views you really needed to pay for were the Rumble, Mania, Money in the Bank, and SummerSlam. Maybe the Chamber show if you wanted full clarity on what the who was going to the matches at WrestleMania. So if you just look at the idea that you're paying $60 for WrestleMania and then getting the other five shows to go along with it, I'm perfectly satisfied. But the comedy of all that was in January or late December, whenever it was, they announced, like, teased what was going to be on the network and first revealed that, like, yes, every pay-per-view is going on, including WrestleMania. I was like, cool, but I also thought, like, that is some fancy math to make this work. And then as the year played out, like, kind of, like, the serious story of that is that they start this network and then they wildly overproject it, and their system of compensation for that was just like not pay the wrestlers as much as they had been and take it out of that slice of the pie. Go ahead.
And fire lots of people and cut back on all your productions and lose
exactly
a lot of money.
I was going to say, then, like, talk about working yourself into a shoot. They work themselves into, like, Black Friday of laying off a whole bunch of their staff. Which, granted, is, you know, business as usual in corporate America, but we get to see that, like, play out with all the principals, some of whom are, like, TV characters, and you get to follow the story. So when the victims and the perpetrators are people we know and watch every week, it makes it hit a little closer to home.
Yes, and some random warehouse worker that we don't give a shit about.
Right. And Kevin Marshall, the writer.
Yeah, but no, but going back to your point, Alan, I'm very much in the same camp as you. Like, to me, I think the WWE Network's great. I still do. Like, I hear people sort of make complaints about this or that, but I think it's a great value. They have all sorts of stuff. They have a lot more stuff than I have time to go through. I've been going through it forever. There's still, you know, shitloads of stuff. I've been going through random Saturday night's main events for the last, like, 4 or 5 months, and, you know, I've still got tons of
notes. I was out sick from work one day this week, and I watched a Saturday night's main event, and it was delightful on a Wednesday at 11 a.m., just, like, being in bed. Even though I was sick, I was like, hey, I'm watching Jake Roberts and Rick Rude feuding over Rick Rude's tights. This is fantastic. I wish all days were sick days.
Well, I feel like once you got your wish, you may regret that one.
This is true. This is true.
Sick for the rest of your life.
I wish all days were like sick days where you're sick by like a minor cold or something. Well, even that would probably suck. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my god,
it was a good day though.
Remember when you took me because DKP did all those make a wishes and you walked down the halls going, "You don't know how good you have it." Taylor made man versus Marcus Alexander Bagwell 2 out of 3.
I could settle into that.
give me that cancer, kid. No, but I mean, yeah, I think
off of me just a little there.
Yeah, I think that the Netty Network has been a great value for people that have it, but not such a great proposition for Netty, which, I mean, I really feel like that should have been a lot more obvious to a lot of people than it was when you looked at the math in the beginning.
It's just the word that comes. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Justin. I'm shocked at how. I thought they'd have. I know one of the main key people involved left very early after it started. I believe his name was.
Perkins?
Was it Perkins Miller? Was that it? Okay. Maybe if he was in charge the whole way through, maybe it would have been a lot better handled. But it's been just a massive balls up since, more or less shortly after it started. One comedic, ridiculous, they don't know what they're doing thing after another. And it's only been highlighted more by the fact that you see how well-run UFC Fight Pass seemingly is, how well-run the New Japan Network seemingly is, and these are both smaller companies than WWE. So I find it quite staggering how it's just the culture of the company just... Even something like that, which isn't a wrestling booking related thing, they can just make such a fucking hames of. It's amazing to me. I wonder, is their HR department a complete joke? Is their cleaning crew just awful? It seems like just anything associated within that company, they can't do right.
And the irony is that's been their calling card for years, is a well-run business, even when they had problems in creative.
Yeah, well, this was a glaring example of things not being well-run. Moving on from the network, we mentioned it earlier, NXT. Don't want to spend a huge amount of time on this now because we're getting a bit long on the tooth, but NXT, as I kind of noted earlier, I love the live specials. They were fantastic. The shows in between them could be hit or miss. This week was a good week, for instance, but there have been other weeks not so hot. Tends to just, with the way they tape it, some of the shows, maybe later in the taping, aren't as hot as some of the earlier shows. I find that while they go all out with the wrestling on the four or five big shows they've done, a lot of the wrestling, even with good guys on just the week-to-week shows, can be kind of disappointing and kind of plodding. So I don't think, when I hear NXT as this blow-away, amazing promotion, best weekly TV show type thing, I kind of roll my eyes a little bit. I think a lot of those people aren't watching it every week, to be honest. I think people are just getting colored by the live specials again, which... Not to take away from them, because every one of them, complete home run. I've loved everyone. So good. I really loved the one in June where they had the Paul Heyman, Renee Young pre-show, after-show kind of stuff. That was just great. I think that was the one with Tyler Breeze versus Sami Zayn, Charlotte versus Natalya, and I want to say... Tyson Kidd versus Adrian Neville? I think it was, yeah. That was my favorite one, I think. But obviously the title match on the most recent one was pretty spectacular as well.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about NXT, aside from them, producing those great specials, and I agree with your overall synopsis of sort of the promotion as far as the individual shows not being as good as the specials. Although the caveat I should add is that I probably catch about half of the regular shows. So it's not like I'm watching everyone, but of the ones I see, yeah, that's definitely the trend.
I would say I'm in a similar boat, but I certainly think there's enough to sample size there for me that I've seen that there is it is a hit and miss kind of thing. And from what I hear about the other shows, and I read reviews and listen to stuff every week, and it seems like that pattern continues on shows I don't see myself.
The one thing that's sort of notable about the whole thing, and this sort of ties into sort of a larger theme, is that this really, and I think it's something I alluded to at the beginning, if not, it was something I was meaning to, was there's sort of been this sort of movement of indie guys more and more being sort of accepted as guys that WWE is interested in. If years back, you really had to work if you were an indie guy to to get a WWE tryout or to get, you know, into the WWE. And now it feels like, you know, they'll have these, you know, gigantic tryouts where they have, you know, everyone who's on the indies who doesn't have a big, you know, an exclusive contract with someone else who got a tryout.
When Mick Foley was in 2004 was trying to get, and it was well documented and talked about at the time, shoot interviews where they talked about it, I think a few months later, when Mick Foley was trying to get CM Punk and Samoa Joe into WWE, it seemed like the most far-out, unbelievable concept. The two biggest indie names would get into WWE. And now here we are where so many indie names, not just the top ones, but so many, are just, like, emerging into WWE like it's nothing. And that's a big culture change, and there's a lot of specific people that I think were responsible for that, and one of them is our DKP buddy, Rob Naylor. I think you talk to a lot of people down there, and there won't be shy in telling you himself. He was responsible for a lot of those guys being on that radar, and it's been, I think, the success of guys who've got through, like Cesaro and Seth Rollins and stuff like that. I think they've probably given the company more confidence in bringing these guys through, along with their sort of non-wrestling athletes that they always try and bring through regardless.
Well, it should be common sense. I mean, the best guys that
completely
are available out there are the guys on the indies. And I mean, I think for years they had this sort of the stereotype of, you know, indie guys are these, you know, vanilla flippy do guys who don't have any charisma, and that just wasn't the case. I mean, the people that get over on the indies by and large are the sorts of people that get over on the main stage, you know, from Ambrose and Rollins and Punk to Bryan and Cesaro. I mean, the best guys in the company for the most part are guys that were in the indies. And I mean, just this year they signed Steen, they signed Kenta, Devitt, Drake Younger, Willie Mack, UHA Nation. I mean, they're signing a lot. I mean, I will be surprised if they don't sign Ricochet eventually. You know, they're bringing in the best guys from the smaller stages, and it enhances the product. And I think that's an encouraging sign going forward. I mean, you just look at all these guys that they have down there in NXT, and if you bring them up, and this is a big if, I'm just about to say, and if you use them the right way, I mean, these guys can be your, you know, your headliners of the future. I keep saying this, but I feel very strongly about it, so I keep saying it. But to me, you bring in Steen tomorrow, you've got a main event guy. All you have to do is push him as a main event guy, and that guy's a headliner immediately.
Same with Devitt. Same with Sami Zayn, I think, as a main event babyface.
I think Zayn takes a little bit more time. I think Zayn has the talent to be there, but I think that Zayn's a guy that it takes people a little bit longer to figure it out, whereas Steen will just talk shit from the beginning and make people take notice. But I mean,
are we all still here? Justin, you here?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, did you drop out there for a second?
I dropped out for a long time.
Oh, really?
I was trying to, like, subtly put myself back in. I dropped out when we were still talking about the network. Sounds like you're talking about NXT.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
That I can see I was missed.
I feel kind of awkward here.
Well, to be fair, I mean, we both did say two or three times that we really missed Justin. But other than that,
and I definitely prefaced several comments with "as Justin would say." So, sorry, Justin. Your thoughts on NXT, buddy?
Did this spring from the network value question? Because it's, well, I mean, I don't, forgive me if I'm treading over old ground, but I don't think the weekly NXT show is that blow away.
No, that's a brand new point. It's well raised, and it's a hot take, quite frankly.
we both vehemently disagreed with that, so there's great dissension on that point.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I like wins and losses mattering. I like a serious context to my wrestling program. What other new ground can I break? No, that show sort of I think I get the appeal. Like, for one, it's only an hour long, and not just the length, but there's definitely a very simplified booking A to B to C that must be very appealing in contrast with what goes on the main roster. It's sort of like a Fantasyland level to it. A lot of people compared the Sami Zayn thing to the Bryan thing and said they actually preferred the Sami thing. And the Zayn thing, don't get me wrong, was perfect and great. But it meant a little more to me. Like, Daniel Bryan actually had to beat the system, whereas NXT is sort of just like Fantasyland is what I said. It's not the same sort of pitfalls you have to overcome. That being said, those four
Tyler Breeze is sitting back there going, that guy doesn't know how to work. Send him down.
Oh, the politics and the bullshit in that, which couldn't be any more embodied. Speaking of things you should impeach Vince over, like, I know...
They'll lose track of your, that being said, I was interested in where you were going.
Right. Meltzer and Charlotte had a meltdown, but, like, what more needs to be said about, like, why people should be wary about how these two things are gonna or how NXT is gonna feed into the main roster? Without watching the weekly TV, even, the four specials told a direct story with Zayn and Neville, right? Yep. Charlotte, too, and her various programs to that extent. So you have those four shows, all of which I would say were blow-away, and each one of which had a blow-away, at least one blow-away match on it. So,
Cesaro and Zayn, amazing match back in February.
Yep, and then I guess Charlotte would be the standout on the next one. And then the four-way, right? And then the title switch.
Yep.
So, yeah, when it wins Show of the Year in the Observer Awards, I'll kind of be like, well, you know, there's quite a bit of filler on that show. But, you know, in general, in terms of, like, hardcore enjoyment and goodwill, I wonder where they'd be without the NXT supplement this year.
It'll be a much more interesting race for Best Weekly TV Show next year with New Japan Access and Lucha Underground having a full year under its belt. Mm. So that'll be interesting. Next thing, guys. How about we go with the new characters that debuted on the roster? Bo Dallas.
From NXT,
Rusev,
Segway?
Emma Pay. Yes, exactly. Literally, we go from NXT, just like these guys did. Bo Dallas, Rusev, Emma, Paige, Adam Rose, The Bunny, Stardust, New Day, Ascension. What have we thought, Todd? You're chuckling, aren't you?
What is it? Well, yeah, I think just the name Ascension is enough at this point. They were a punchline.
No, I think Todd's chuckling at me, like, word for word, taking credit for his hard work here. Literally reading it verbatim.
No. I was chuckling at the list. I mean, like, that's your list of who you're calling up over the course of the year. I'm sorry, that's literally all your new acts. Go ahead, Justin.
Was it not a hashtag Todd talking point after our evolution? When you were like, that's a great show, but why isn't the big question, like, if it's this great, why aren't these guys filling up 3 hours of a dire Monday Night Raw? And then in part and parcel with that, you have all these the names you guys presumably were talking about in NXT while I was gone, but like really entertaining people, WWE Universe, Let Me Entertainment You, in NXT, and then the call-ups of calendar year were, like, the single success story is probably Rusev, and I give him a lot of credit for far exceeding my expectations and sort of becoming...
Yeah, I'm big on the Rusev. I think for a full year point of view, I think Rusev may be my favorite thing about WWE in 2014. I know, Todd, you might disagree on that.
Outrageous sentiment. The best thing about 2014 was clearly Mr. T.
That might be a special category at the end of, like, potent potables standout moments.
I'm talking more a consistent, although Rusev only came up in March.
He was consistent. He went on for about 3 days. It was great.
You could, he kept, he had a beat like a cop.
He did not fluctuate. He made no. he was consistent.
That's why it was a perfect what rhythm. What? But I don't remember what we talked about on this show in January, but maybe at some point we entertained like the notion of what Sami Zayn or Adrian Neville might do if they were caught up on the main roster, and all the potential and the like, the positive fan sentiment behind NXT and what they contributed to Raw was almost begins and ends with Rusev. This, you also saw it in the Slammy, like, newcomer of the year voting. And I think he's had a trajectory similar to Umaga, where first it was like a groan, but then his squashes and then gradual, like, vulnerability selling has built well. And Lana's great, but at the same time, this is a character they're basing on, like, pretty played out wrestling stuff, and somewhat tasteless when. Especially tied into some of the more serious things that the nation of Russia has done this year. Not that that's any different than like the long history of professional wrestling, but it sort of anachronistic and juxtaposed to some of the other things going on. But yeah, that's your one substantial addition to like your matches on top is. Was Rusev, and I mean, Paige had her moments, although I don't think it quite lived up to what people had hoped for. Not that it's entirely her fault, but then beyond that, like, Adam Rose and Emma and stuff is especially...
Oh, Bo's Alice is
especially
gone.
The Ascension. And Bo, if anything, had the most potential, I think, of all the also-rans as, like, a comedy cult character, and they couldn't even capitalize on that, so...
Yeah.
And he's the best of a suspect bunch.
Yeah, Bono's one note gimmicks. I mean, the thing that struck me and amused me about the list of the debuts is just like how the way that they're framing these characters. I mean, regardless of what you think of these people as talents, and there is sort of a larger point to be made that was just made about the idea of who you're choosing to call up. Like the way they're introducing people, it's like when your list of guys that you introduce over the year is pretty much all gimmicks that couldn't possibly get past the mid-card level, and most of them don't even get to the mid-card level, like, that's a bad sign. Why aren't you introducing people that could potentially be headliners if they click right? So, I mean, that's a real frustration with WWE right now, is sort of presenting people in a way where they're slotted to be nobodies from the very beginning. I mean, that's... You know, they did a good job with putting some new people in main events, but they didn't do a good job of creating the next group of guys that could potentially then move into those situations.
It's almost like they're hoarding them for like hardcore fan giving them good reviews on Twitter on the NXT show, which can also be a feather in Triple H's cap since that's his baby. But it's almost like the philosophy behind who they call it up. Like with the women, it seems like, especially with Emma Paige, there was actually a good idea behind that. But then the follow-up, she really was more or less paraded out as one of the more pushed, but just one of the many faces there. With the women, it's like, hey, we could use a woman. Get one up here. And I wouldn't be surprised just to see Sasha Banks start appearing on Raw in six-man tags randomly at some point. With the men, it was across the board, even Rusev almost seems like people who had done all they could in developmental, and you either had to call them up or cut them, and they were generous enough to cut them. like Adam Rose, especially, you know, as Leo Kruger had.
Did you mean cut them? By the way,
what did I say?
You said you were generous.
Yeah, I was wondering the same.
To cut them, which I sort of an amusing Freudian slip.
Yeah, it's almost like. It's built into your contract that you will get 3 weeks of vignettes and buried by the announcers before you are fired from developmental.
So, guys, we're running tight on time here. So what I want to do is I want to give you each a window to bring up any other points of relevance you have for the year, and you want to make sure you get out to the listeners on what I've decided now is this free edition.
Whoa!
Of the 50% show. So we're reaching the masses across the internet, the galaxy. And
do you
ever go up? Sorry, Justin Todd, do you ever go up as a free show with Brian? Does he ever do that?
Only occasionally. That guy, I tell you.
Well, this is your big chance. I'm not gonna rein you in like he does. I'm gonna expose you, Todd, to the mask.
Yikes! That didn't go so well the last time.
So Justin, lead us off. Any other points you want to bring up that we haven't touched on in this discussion?
I am watch me tie this together. I'm concerned that you are giving away this free show, and you're going to find out, like with Survivor Series, that it was accidentally the show that people were most willing to pay for. Wouldn't that be upsetting for you? You're in review with Todd Martin? What a draw. Oh, we can just have it. Okay. Which brings me, I feel like the 2 days out of the year I was so happy was WrestleMania and the night after WrestleMania, and it so very quickly dissipated. I hope we didn't even talk about Cesaro, but what can you even say?
It's when I was walking back to the hotel from WrestleMania, we were all thinking about, because Devitt had just had his final match in New Japan, it was pretty obvious he was coming in, and we decided there and then, like, gotta come to Mania next year. It's like, this roster that have just done this here today, and like, think about where Cesaro's just got elevated to now. He's clearly going to be a main event guy at Mania next year in a huge match. He'll have Brock, Bryan, Roman Reigns is just going to be the biggest star. He's so cool. He's so awesome. And then we're going to have Devitt coming in. He'll probably be on the main roster, and he'll be used amazingly because they use all these wrestlers to their potential now. Oh, it's fantastic. What a world we live in. Oh, I can't wait for WrestleMania next year. And, yeah, Cesaro.
Coming out of that show.
Cesaro is the like a personification of just how much that thought process that I had and we all had then just got trampled on.
We were talking about if it's possible to have a great, consistent 3-hour Raw, and I'm still not sure where you're going to get the consistency from, but there was at least a great 3-hour Raw, and this year was not entirely because of like the crowd being a fascinating like train wreck, but it was actually in conjunction with what was going on, and the company this year and for the last few years, like, the talent is so willing to work hard, and the crowd clearly tries to care about things when the contact allows them to.
Not anymore. I think they've given up. I honestly do. I think in the last 2 months, I think the crowd have just said, fuck
that
this.
That very well could be.
It's scary. It's scary now how quiet the crowds are.
So all the promise of that Monday show was like the new things on the horizon with Daniel Bryan, The Shield, Cesaro. The Wyatt family probably never seemed like a hotter act, and
oh man, crazy! I was so into the Wyatt family, and now it's like, well, I still like Luke Harper, but Bray Wyatt, I'm just so over.
All of that fizzled relatively quickly. The only time, though, I was as excited as I was coming out of that was after the Survivor Series main event. And it wasn't so much the Sting thing as it was Ziggler out of nowhere getting that push just made me so happy for him, because it had been pretty much a year straight after his great moment winning the title after the last WrestleMania that he had been a legitimate jobber on TV. All of a sudden, no one had any expectation of that match. People still aren't even sure if Ryback was supposed to do it. For him to get such an out of nowhere great push. So trying to tie it all together was that maybe there will be a moment like that for Cesaro next year where people will be so sad and then he'll finally get to do something really cool. It remains to be seen whether Dolph goes back to what he had been doing, but it was at least a nice and bizarre 2 months between that main event and winning the title back in his hometown, and now he's fired, so I don't know what's going to happen to him, but good job, Dolph Ziggler, after waiting patiently for a long time.
And Todd, yeah, floor open to you.
Sure, a few things. Number one, I think we should honor the memory of the great King Mabel, a DKP favorite, passed away this year. Justin Shapiro favorite in particular. a long and storied career. Long live the king. Another thing I might have said this with the Brian Charlotte. Hopefully I haven't. I don't think I have. But Great Khali leaving, amongst the people that left this year, I felt like I wish that they had given Great Khali a send-off. Like, granted, he was never, like, a big deal. But, like, Great Khali, I feel like this poor guy, he was so hobbled at the end. And, like, I feel like he was sort of, like, at the end, he was sort of, like, a fun cult comedy figure. And I wish they'd just sort of given him a nice send-off where, like, you know, some heel is doing something, you know, bad. And they announce this is Khali's final show. And, you know, Khali outsmarts them some way. And they send off Great Khali in a happy way. I wish they'd done that. Not that it's like a big deal or anything, but
I think they're they're one quota of it's much like how the departures of Trish Stratus and Lita played out in 2006. After they gave Vicky Guerrero a nice send off, they had exceeded their quota for the year, and anyone else was just lucky to get out with their dignity intact.
Yes, he wasn't humiliated on the way out, so that was a positive.
Maybe his swan song was trapping Paul Heyman in that locker room when John Cena was going to be.
Yeah, that was sort of the closest thing you had to it. I'd also, again, I'd like to emphasize how great Mr. T was, a real highlight of the year. That made me so happy. I loved that speech. Also, I think one sort of big story that we didn't touch on that I think was sort of interesting story was the Del Rio getting fired thing.
Hey, they gave him an incredible send-off and made him incredibly hot on the way out.
That's
now that
true.
You mention it. Uh-huh.
That's true. Del Rio came out of WWE hotter than anyone, and it was completely WWE's doing. And you know, the flip side of that, I got to give them a WWE credit with Bray Wyatt. Like, a lot of acts they killed off this year, but Bray Wyatt, he died all on his own. So, good for WWE on that one. And then just some assorted silliness as I was going through the year. This was the year when the snake took a crap on Dean Ambrose. That was a fine moment. The Damian Sandow playing the role of Magneto was fine. And, of course, who can forget Emma momentarily being fired for shoplifting an iPad case? 2014, ladies and gentlemen.
What a tense afternoon for all the Emma.
Poor Emma. She that was a tough time for her, I'd imagine. And Todd, you hear scoffing at us.
Well, no, I thought it was interesting. And what do you know, Alan? For all we know, she's a criminal mastermind. She was making off with these iPad cases everywhere, and she outsmarted them and got away with it.
Mm-hmm. And now she is just, like, cackling over her cents on the dollar network payout that she's been stealing from the company that should have been ixnayed months and months ago.
She's got a whole case full of stolen iPad cases, and she hasn't been punished for it at all.
Oh, my God. That's, like, dozens of second screen experiences.
As she sits backstage, not even really bothering to even pretend to put her gear on, because she knows she's not getting used tonight.
If I think about it, like, the list of people I would say, aside from those who are already grandfathered into the Protected Club, who were booked well this year as new acts, would be Rusev, Seth Rollins, despite some of your quibbles, I think they've certainly, like, taken him up a notch, especially considering, like, did anyone think he would be planning
it's a weird,
as a top heel?
It's a weird thing for, it's a weird thing for me. They've taken him up a notch, he's higher on the card, he's in a great position, a really great position, perfect position for him, but I just don't find a lot of it very entertaining, and it's not because of him, it's because he's just kind of not being used in entertaining scenarios for the most part for me.
I completely agree with you, Alan. Not that I disagree anyway. With Justin, by the way, but that's pretty much my take on him, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way I can sum it up.
I think if you look at, like, the Flair / Thez guy, who was not necessarily John Cena over this time, but the entertaining guy who, and not just appealing to hardcores, but, like, carries the product and is an important glue on television, I would say that torch has gone in the Cena era from Edge to Mean Suit Jericho, and then he handed it to CM Punk even before the pipe bomb, and then Punk passed it to Daniel Bryan, and then Rollins, I would say, has it now, but I think it's been a drop-off from where Daniel Bryan was at his peak to Rollins now.
Okay, guys, we really got to wrap this up.
By the way, one other act that I think that WWE did right by this year was Usos. I think like
pretty
consistently they found them good stuff to do, good programs, good entertaining stuff. Like I think the Usos had a good year, and I think WWE used them well.
They were the third on my list after Rusev and Rollins.
I think Booker T's prediction on commentary in 2011 is finally starting to come true. Now, granted, he gave a shorter time frame.
That he's coming for Hulk Hogan?
No. It was a shorter time frame, but it's maybe a little late, but it's starting to occur. Booker T said in the next 12 months, each of these guys, Michael, they're probably going to gain like about 100 to 150 pounds each. And even Michael Cole was broke. He's like, wait, what? What did you just say? But it's starting to, they've got into the t-shirt phase of their career, as Joe Lanza would say, and they've embraced it. So good on them. I've got nothing against a beefy Samoan who can still throw a mean top rope splash. But I'm worried about the show uploading in one part now, guys, so we've got to wrap it up. I'm putting it up as a free show, so anyone, if you're not a regular on this website, if you do not subscribe, check out all the other great content here, the Wrestling Observer newsletter, all the other great radio shows, including all our other DKP shows, the Christmas shows we just did, and the forthcoming, of course, Road to WrestleMania shows that we'll be doing. So, a lot to enjoy on the website, so please check it out and subscribe and all that good stuff. And guys, I want to thank you both so much. And if you have anything you guys want to get out and tell the listeners about, Todd, I know you're a big fan of doing that, but I will respectfully leave you alone if you wish to pass that just to Justin. But
what a dick! What a conclusion to this show. I'd like to plug Justin Shapiro on Twitter. It's JM Shapiro.
Why am I a dick?
With a Y.
It's all true.
What did I do there that was dickish? I'm taking exception to this.
I have made my stance on plugs known. I do not like plugging things, and here I am, and I'm.
I thought I was being nice. I just wanted to give you a window, and then I said I'd be completely respectful if you wished not to. I wasn't going to mock you like some other people.
Well, I took it as torture. So I'd like to plug JM Shapiro on Twitter with a Y, and of course Alan Forel on Twitter, a fine man, a fine gentleman, in spite of his desire to torture people with forced plugs.
Justin, what you got going on, babe?
It would be a good, if you were curating your Twitter feed, Alan would have 100% wrestling content. Many of it, names I don't even know what he's talking about, but he seems really happy. And then I have next to none. I have next to no wrestling content and almost no.
And hence, I never know what you're talking about.
And such an accord was struck. High five. I would like to plug Bob Dylan, Shadows in the Night, new album, February 3rd, 2015.
Ooh, exciting.
The Crooner.
I didn't realize it was coming out that soon.
73-year-old Bob Dylan singing the standards of Frank Sinatra. Saw him sing Stay With Me in Pittsburgh, the Sinatra standard. Showstopper, Heath Miller of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Moved to Tears, I presume. He was there.
Heath.
Yep. Heath Miller, Heath Slater. His name in developmental had it
free again.
What a shame we can't talk about him. Oh well,
we can now. He's free again. His good name has been what's that phrase? It's late here. I can't speak.
Cleared,
redeemed,
cleared, redeemed. Any of those work. Everyone, thank you for listening. It's been a great show. I've really enjoyed it. Hope you have too. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Justin. We'll be talking to you guys again very soon. Bye, everybody.
Oops. Calé